91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we reminisce with one of the most experienced and admired athletic trainers and sports medicine figures in the world, Bill Norris. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Norris started in the profession as a young man, taking care of premier Major League Baseball players, stellar NBA players, and those competing in the super stressful world of professional tennis. Here's his center court who's who: McEnroe, Ash, Connors, Agassi, Lendl, Becker, Edberg, Federer, and Nadal. He tells a story of giving advice to Princess Diana for chronic tennis elbow. So we'll hear more from his decades on tour in minutes after NPR and regional news.
And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. I'm the tennis fan, so I get to start.
You sure are.
Well, the 115th edition of the French Open at Roland Garros is now underway. It's the second of four Grand Slam events, of course. There'll be tremendous matches, there already have been, throughout June 5th. So, this hour, we take a look at the world of big-time tournament tennis and not-so-big-time tournament tennis with a veteran who's been on the scene for decades.
He's famed athletic trainer Bill Norris. We've just had the pleasure to meet him. He's taken care of some of the world's greatest athletes, and not only famed tennis players, but baseball and basketball all-time greats as well.
Bill Norris has published a new memoir, which also includes tips for recreational athletes and for anybody, actually, who works out. The book is called Pain, Set, and Match, Keeping Players on Court by the man who has treated such stars from Rod Laver to Roger Federer. And he joins us now in the studio. Welcome, Bill Norris.
Thanks, Bonnie and Joe. It's good to be here.
Now, joining us a little bit later in the program, maybe in a few minutes, live from Roland Garros, is the co-author of the book, Richard Evans, who's been a journalist for decades as well. So, I'm so excited to have you here, and I loved going behind the scenes with your book.
Well, thank you. It was a labor of love to put it together, and Richard helped me a lot on this. Richard Evans is my co-writer, and he and I go back about 40 years. So we uncovered a lot of different stories that in these folds of my brain that I could bring back.
You're telling us some right now.
He has some remarkable memories.
Remarkable memory. So before we get to everything, we're going to focus, a lot on the tennis, but you've not only been at the epicenter of the ATP Tour for decades, you truly were at the epicenter of the world of sports medicine, therapy, athletic training, as it shifted seismically, really, from what it was when you first started to what it is today. Just tell us about that evolution.
Well, I think the way sports medicine evolved, the things that have come up have been really a thing of need. And you get a product, say like the MRI and diagnostic tools like that, the CAT scan, just different things that we could make a correct diagnosis and to help physicians zero in, but also to help the therapists like myself. And some of my friends that were on the cutting edge back in the 60s and 70s, they played an integral part, really, of this whole complex of sports medicine, because we could see how, the amateur athlete, whether it was a weekend warrior or whether it was someone that just wanted to go for a jog on the weekend, it created a need because these people had no instruction of playing a sport or having an activity. And with overuse, you get injury. And if you don't have a good foundation to build strength and flexibility, then everything goes by the wayside. And this is one of the reasons that different congresses that we've put together, that I've had a part of being an organizer of getting people to come around and to find a different way, technology, to diagnose these injuries. And when I first started in the early 60s up until even the present, I've seen a lot of different things that of technology evolve, and it's become, it was a product of need to have something like this. And the public and the private sector, they've made these demands on us. So we've tried to accommodate everyone along those lines in getting good diagnostic tools that we can work with. And as far as therapeutic modalities, therapeutic ultrasound, therapeutic laser technology, I've had a real big part of developing those products that the consumer can use and to help treat these injuries and get them back on the field or the court to play.
Right. Well, we're going to focus on tennis, as I said, but you actually began your athletic training career in baseball with the Pittsburgh Pirates as an intern, right? So if you could just give us a snapshot of your early years with the Pirates, with the Knicks, with the Mets, just tell us a little about that and how you made the crossover to tennis.
Well, I was very fortunate. I grew up on the west coast of Florida in Fort Myers, and the Pittsburgh Pirates moved their training camp there in 1955. They had been over here on this coast. But one of the first people that I met was Branch Rickey, and he had left Brooklyn. He had left Brooklyn hurriedly because the O'Malleys had pushed him out, and he came to Pittsburgh, and he was our general manager there. But I was very fortunate that I love baseball. I didn't have the ability to be a professional, but I wanted to be a part of this whole thing of professional sports. So the truck came down from Pittsburgh. I helped unload the truck, got my foot in the door. The athletic trainer and the therapist, they were there, and I started helping them. First year, maybe I helped out as a bat boy, but I got my foot in the door. And Mr. Rickey really was a mentor to me those years, and he was a wonderful opportunity for a boy of 12 years old. Wow. And so I got this whole idea of behind-the-scenes preparation that the equipment manager and the athletic trainer and the therapist and the doctors, they was a whole different dynamic. So I learned really that I could find my own little niche in sports, and that was in sports medicine. So I took all that knowledge after I finished 6 years of taking care of the Pirates and helping them, went on to Manatee College in Bradenton, where I was the athletic trainer. I was a volunteer, and I helped work with those teams there. And when I finished there, I went to the Gus Mauch School of Athletic Training in Kissimmee, which was a school that had the sponsorship of and was part of the University of Florida system. And went through his program there, graduated from his program, and the Mets hired me right away. Gus Mauch was the Mets athletic trainer and therapist, and I became one of his assistants. So it was a great opportunity.
What year in the Mets with the Mets?
That was in '63.
So you there with Casey Stengel?
I was with Casey, oh, wow. And he was another mentor. He was another father figure for me. And
Crane Pool.
Yeah, well, Crane Pool was still in the minor leagues, but we had Marvelous Marv Thronberry.
Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, exactly. And one time he blew a ground ball, went through his legs, and he came into the dugout, and Casey Stengel broke down in tears. He had never seen such a terrible display of fielding. But we had some characters back then.
So we're going to be joined by Richard Evans pretty soon. But before we do that, it seems, now that I've met you, I can see why all the athletes loved you. Because you had such a special way with them. So how do you account for the fact that you were so welcomed and accepted by just about everybody, no matter their personality, the size of their ego, no matter how much they hated each other, as in the case of, let's say, Connors and McEnroe, their standing or their medical needs, you cut through all that and became friends with most of these guys and women.
Yeah, this is true, Bonnie. I have this wonderful talent. I guess it's a talent. My wife says it's a gift that I have of being able to help people and no matter what, how much exterior, whatever their exterior is, I'm able to zero in, because basically they all have needs. And if it's a physical need, my job is to get them and to not really worry about the personalities, just to take care of that need and to be able to relate to them and to be able to draw out what they need of me and to address that need.
And what they needed of you was not only, the amazing thing is you were not just the healer for their bodies. You dealt with their minds and, you know, you were like their psychologist, confidant, friend. You dealt with their mental and emotional health as much as you did their physical health.
Well, that's true.
And still do.
Yeah, I still do. And my patients that come to see me in Boca Raton, you know, I try to give them the same attention that I would give a Roger Federer. So,
Roger Federer. Okay, we're going to be joined by Richard Evans shortly. We're talking with Bill Norris. He's a sports medicine trainer, therapist, and he was an indispensable part of the ATP Tour and frequently the U.S. Davis Cup team for over 40 years. He's written with Richard Evans, Pain, Set, and Match, Keeping Players on Court by the Man Who's Treated the Stars from Rod Laver to Roger Federer. We'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, visiting with Bill Norris, sports medicine trainer, therapist, and all-around great guy, who with Richard Evans has written Pain, Set, and Match, Keeping Players on the Court by the Man Who's Treated the Stars from Rod Laver to Roger Federer. So welcome back to you, Bill Norris.
Good to be here.
Okay, and joining us now, he's been a working journalist and author for 6 decades, mostly covering sports, primarily tennis, which he's covered since the 1960s, reporting on more than 160 Grand Slams. 20 years, he was the BBC, worked for the BBC Radio at Wimbledon, and currently works for Tennis Channel at the French Open, where he is right now. Richard Evans, hi.
Bonsoir.
Bonsoir from Paris. How are you?
Pretty good. We've sort of managed to get some tennis on court despite an inordinate amount of rain. It rained on Sunday, it rained yesterday, but today we've escaped the rain. Still chilly in Paris, but lots of tennis. Sad news, Victoria Azarenka has just had to quit. She got an injury and had to pull out at four love down in the third set, so that's sad for her. She's struggled with injuries and a great champion, but not a champion here this year, unfortunately.
And I saw Angelique Kerber was upset this morning by an unseeded young lady.
Yes, that was another upset. We've had a few. Andy Murray struggled against the 37-year-old Radek Stepanek, who Bill will know very well. He's probably looked after Stepanek, who's quite a character from the Czech Republic, and he got into the fifth set. He was leading by 2-1 overnight, having won the first 2 sets, and Murray double-faulted on his first match point. It all got very nervous at 5-6 in the fifth, but Murray came through in the end. Very relieved young man he was.
And Wawrinka had a really tough match too.
Yes, this is a tough court to play on now. All the courts, they're very heavy. They've been saturated with rain for days, and so the balls are heavy, and a lot of people who can just shovel the ball back are going to worry the top players, but so far most of them have survived.
Well, say hello to your friend Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
Your co-author.
When you say those balls are heavy, you know, anybody have a shoulder problem out there, that's got to be a tough thing for them.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it puts a strain on everything, doesn't
absolutely.
It? You've got to be physically strong. You've seen these players get stronger and stronger over the years, Bill, but now you've really got to be a top class athlete to compete on either the women or the men's tours, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's the great thing about both medical staffs of the WTA and the ATP, both the women and the men. They have excellent clinicians and therapists, and they're doing a great job.
And you know,
we said in the book that, sorry, am I butting in? But
No, please.
We said in the book that you enjoyed working here in France. You know, the French get a bit of a bad rap, but if you understand the French and the Parisians, you can get on with them pretty well. Of course, you have this facility to get on with most people, but you had some very kind things to say about French medicine and the doctors who work here at the French Open, didn't you?
Yes, they probably set the pace for the rest of the medical community in tennis, because they were always on the cutting edge of getting the right products and the right diagnostic tools. So I have a lot of respect for the French medical team there at Roland Garros and in general, because they really try their best to help the players in any way they can.
Actually, you both wrote that Roland Garros was the friendliest and the most cooperative of all the slams.
Absolutely. And, you know, I still have contact with a lot of the people that I worked with back in those days. We had this one, Francois Fisch, who developed this special type of tape that when you had humid conditions like you have at during the French Open, this type of tape would stand up under the most adverse conditions. So they were always building research on new products there. And I was always privy to that, which is great. So
let me ask you, because as we heard from Richard and as we know, there have been terrible rain delays in Paris. So how does that affect the athletes?
Well, they have so much time and they don't know when to eat. And that's why we went back years ago to having liquid meals for them, so the nutrients could assimilate into their bodies quicker than regular meals.
Because, you know, all of a sudden they say, okay, you can play now. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and you don't have any time to prepare, so you have to continually eat. So there's a little bit of bloating there.
Ah, yes.
You fall back on the old banana, don't you, Bill?
Yeah, bananas are easy. Yeah, sure.
Richard, who are you covering? Are you covering the match for Roland Garros right now or for the Tennis Channel or whom?
No, I'm working for the Tennis Channel on the what we call the Mosaic feed. So if you go on DirecTV, you can choose which match you want to watch. You can listen to the main feed, or you can take a choice of five courts we have going simultaneously, and you just switch to whichever court is showing the match that most interests you. So it's a menu, and we've got our team of commentators on all five courts, and I do my shifts like the rest of my team.
And
how
would you say the overall level of play is?
Well, the level of play is, at Grand Slam level, you're playing unbelievable tennis. I've just been watching a match between a couple of players who are not ranked in the top 100 in the world, but they hit the ball so well, and you can't believe that they're not in the top 100 in the world. So you get good tennis, whatever you're watching, really, at Grand Slam level. And as I was saying, it's the athleticism now that has changed more than anything. I think the bigger rackets, the more powerful rackets, and above all, the different strings. Gut is used in some cases now. Roger Federer uses half gut and half the synthetic stringing, but it's the synthetic stringing that's allowed the players to hit the ball so much harder and with added spin keep the ball in play. So that is why you see much longer rallies and the ball being hit more powerfully. It's technology that's come into the game that's changed it.
And you mentioned Roger Federer. Why did he have to not compete?
He's got this nagging back injury. Bill would be able
to
tell you in greater detail, but he just took a precaution. He realizes that the French is probably the worst chance he has of winning another slam. Wimbledon is probably the best, so he wanted to be properly prepared for Wimbledon.
Well, I think Roger is at this point that he really has to pace himself. And he knew that with the weather conditions, because they predicted this weather would be like this this week, you get one slip and you're out for not only this tournament, but for
Wimbledon.
So the schedule, the middle part of your schedule is so jammed up that he really have to take some precautions going in this, with his low back and his thoracic region of his back. those are very suspect points of his condition. So he really had to really make some very big decisions to withdraw, and I think he's probably done the right thing, get the therapy, and get ready for Wimbledon.
Now, you wrote that because of Roger's particular build, the way he moves,
right,
and his lack of injuries,
right,
that he had.
I think that's a contributing thing. His physical presence is such that when he runs, he's not really a heavy runner. Where like Nadal is a heavy runner. Roger is very light on his feet. And so that really has been to his benefit.
And so would you say that this injury now, even though I know you're not treating him, but do you think this had more to do with his age now and just the accumulation?
Absolutely. You just don't recover like you did when you were younger. Plus, I think the surgical procedure he had on his knee a few months ago, because that affects the way you're trying to protect that knee when you're rehabilitating.
Right.
So the back was vulnerable. His back was vulnerable as well. So
it throws off the balance of
the rest
of the
exactly,
body.
Yes, exactly.
So what else has changed? I'll ask both of you, Richard. You were talking about the equipment, how the equipment has changed. And what else has changed that have made it a faster, more, I don't know if the word's dangerous, but people are more prone to injuries now, it seems.
I would say the equipment has changed. It's a more powerful game.
It seems like people are bigger, too.
Yeah, we're producing, larger specimens, let's put it that way. The athletic ability is there. The players are the beneficiaries of good sports science and good equipment. And those two components affect really the physicality of it. But I think the thing is that players today, it is a faster game. In the old days when we played with wood, we didn't have the rotator cuff problems, strains and sprains of the different musculature. We didn't have that, but we do now, and we have to prepare for it. It's a faster game, and we just have to get everything all lined up, our ducks lined up, so to speak, and produce a player that's not only mentally, physically fit, but you have to have a different attitude, and it's a very professional attitude.
What about the new rackets that influences the rotator cuff? Is that they have a different action on the shoulder?
Yes, with the different materials of making the rackets, it produced a power game. When you played with
wood.
So
you're using different angles?
Yes, you're using different and different spins. You can make the ball spin a different way.
And so, you also wrote that the athletes are actually faster now.
They are faster. And that a lot of that comes really from the conditioning, and the coaches are more educated, and the players are more educated. So you're going to produce an athlete that knows the best to get the best out of that cutting edge of getting that that technology put down to a science.
We're going to take a break in just a second, but Richard, can you stay with us?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, are you going to be calling any matches like in the next half hour?
No. Okay. No, I've done my shift for the day. I've done my three shifts for the day.
So which matches did you call? Did you cover?
I was calling a match between Laura Siegmund of Germany and Eugenie Bouchard of Canada first up. That was interesting because, of course, Bouchard is this lovely young lady from Canada who caused such a sensation when she was in the semi-final of the Australian and the French and the final of Wimbledon in succession in 2014, and then fell away rather alarmingly. But now she's back with her original coach, Nick Saviano, who works, of course, just up the road from you in Plantation. He's got his academy there. He's here with her in Paris. And I think we're going to see Bouchard back on track now that she's with Saviano again.
Well, she did win that match, didn't she?
She won it 6-2, 6-2, looking pretty good.
Right. Well, we're speaking, that's the voice of Richard Evans. He's been a working journalist, author for 6 decades, mostly covering sports and primarily tennis. He's at the French Open. He's at Roland Garros right now. And he is the co-author with Bill Norris, a sports medicine trainer and therapist who's been with the tennis for over 40 years. They've written Pain, Set, and Match, Keeping Players on Court by the man who's treated the stars from Rod Laver to Roger Federer. And I will say that in the book, at the back of the book, there are lots of ways to prevent, to deal with injuries that have happened, Bill writes in there, and to prevent them from happening.
Well, that's a real thing that I wanted to do for so long. And because, you know, if you can know how to prevent an injury, even with wear and tear, which this game produces, you still have an edge up. And people always used to ask me, what kind of exercise should I do for this? So after all of these years that I would go to a cocktail party and people would pull me off and, and say, hey, can I pick your mind? What should I do? Oh, many times, sure. And so
that happened with a president once, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Ronald Reagan, right?
Yeah, yes, exactly. But the point is that people always want to know how they can prevent it. And I said, let's put it in a book form. And even down to really how to select a right shoe, because if you don't have the right tennis shoe, something that's going to fit you for that surface, you're going into a match and you could be suspect with your feet.
So it's an entertaining book and a useful book.
Yes.
And speaking of preventing injuries, I want to talk about John McEnroe when we come back, because you singled him out.
Sure.
Not just for his personality. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
I even read How to Put on a Sock.
There you go. Yeah. Sure, sure.
And we're back. It is today's topical currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. And we're talking about tennis and sports medicine. With us is the famed athletic trainer, Bill Norris. He's taken care of some of the world's greatest athletes. Also, his co-author, he's sports journalist and broadcaster, Richard Evans, now with the Tennis Channel. And he's joining us from Paris. Bill Norris, tell us a little bit how you got into tennis. It goes back to the world team tennis, Billie Jean King. And, of course, we always like Florida history on topical currents and the Florida Flamingos, Miami Beach.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That was a great thing. A fellow by the name of Ted Cohen, who had come here with Donnie Sofer to South Florida, who developed the Turnberry Aventura area, he wanted to have a world team tennis franchise. And he went to Billie Jean King, and she suggested, you know, the right people to bring it on. We had Frank Froehling as our player coach, and we played all of our matches indoors those years in world team tennis, and we played at the in this area at the Miami Beach Convention Center, and there was no Miami Heat or anything like that at that time here, and that was the logical venue to play, and you know it that. That league started in 74, and we had some very interesting players in it. Chrissy Everett was just starting her career out, but we had Laurie Fleming, who was from the Fort Lauderdale area. She played on the team. We had Bunny Smith, who was from this area. We had Maria Bueno, who was just coming off of a career, but she had a sore arm, and that was challenging for me to work with her. But we had Cliff Drysdale, who still lives in this area. You know, he's the director of tennis over at the Ritz-Carlton on Key Biscayne. So we had a lot of local people, Mike Belkin from Canada. He's still teaching tennis over on the Key. But we had some great players in that league. Connors played for the Baltimore Banners, and Billie Jean was, at that time, was with the Philadelphia Freedoms. And the Philadelphia Freedom was the title of Elton John's song that he wrote for her, Philadelphia Freedom. And he wrote it for Billy. But we had some great players and great talent in that league. And that's really, along with the men's tour, with the World Championship Tennis, World Team Tennis, I did that was really my introduction really into the tennis tour per se. I had worked before when I was with the Knicks. We had this Rod Laver winner-take-all type of series at Madison Square Garden. But this was a certain type of period in my career that I devoted just to tennis. So,
you know, one thing that caught my attention, yeah. and I've always wondered about this, mm-hmm. you wrote, practically no tennis player goes out there absolutely free of at least a little strain or pain, a little niggle, as
right.
you call it.
Sure.
You go on to say that the aches and pains may vary in intensity, but they're always there.
I think if you become a professional player, you go out there on that court, nothing is going to be 100%, because if you played the day before or even practiced the day before, you're going to be sore. And sometimes you have to work through it. So it's a real mental accomplishment as well as a physical accomplishment.
And the other thing is, and you also wrote that painkillers are a part of the life of an athlete, including a tennis player.
That's true. That is true. There's not many players that won't resort to taking care of, you know, whether it's ibuprofen or acetaminophen, to ease the pain.
I think one of the questions, though, that we probably would love to know is, when do you tell them to continue? When do you tell them not to play? When do you tell them to continue when they have an injury? And when do you tell them to stop?
Well, I put it this way to them. And I've changed through the years, because now I'm in private practice in Boca Raton taking care of tennis players. And I'm more liberal in giving them more time off now. We could see that back then we saw, you know, how a lot of times playing through pain was not always good. But you can only give advice to an athlete. It's what he does with it is the next thing.
Well, give us an example of somebody you said you should stop, they continued.
Well, I'll put it this way. When Boris Becker was playing in 1985 at Wimbledon, he sprained his ankle.
Oh, this is a great story.
And I worked my way through the crowd, finally get to his court. And so, you know, he said, "What do you think?" I said, "Well, let me look." I tested it. I tested the strength that he had in his ligaments, in his ankle. And I'm looking at his eyes, and I could see that, you know, he was so intent. He wanted to play. The integrity of his ligaments and the tendons in his feet and his ankle, they were strong enough that I felt that if I taped it, gave it more support, he could continue. And then I would deal with it after the match.
Right.
So he, a lot of people don't know this. He went out without any medication or anything. He finished the match. He won there. He kept winning until he won the tournament. At 17 years old, the youngest Wimbledon champion ever. But he dedicated, you know, he had to really prove to me that he wanted to play. And I worked around the clock with him giving treatment. But he was able to really get through it. And he had mental strength. Physical strength. And that was when I would say to a guy, go ahead and try to play.
Richard, any...
It was an extraordinary story. I mean, to embellish on it a bit, Boris had hurt his ankle the year before, I think Bill will confirm,
yeah.
and Bill had worked with him on it, and when he felt it go again, he panicked, and he thought he couldn't continue, and he was on the way to the net to shake hands with his opponent.
He had extended his hand already, you know?
Yeah. And Tyriac, his manager, Jan Tyriac, who's here in Roland Garros at the moment, and Gunter Bosch, his coach, shouted out, "Stop, stop, just get Bill." And get Bill was the cry, and it took a while, but because he knew Bill, because Bill Norris had worked on that ankle, as soon as he was in Bill's care, his confidence returned, and he felt that he could continue. And it was obviously a history-changing moment, because if he'd defaulted, that would have been that, and a 17-year-old would not have won Wimbledon that year.
I guess the opponent wasn't so thrilled.
Yeah. Let me ask you something, both of you. Had he been playing on a hard court, had that been the U.S. Open, do you think that he would have been able to continue playing? Had it not been grass?
Good question.
I would have to say no. I think the grass is more forgiving than a hard surface. But Bonnie, you raise a good question. I would tend to say no, that if it was on hard court, that would have been it for him. But I have seen players bounce back even with that. Because, you know, your opponent, the whole course of the match changes. Here the opponent can see mentally how this player is really getting back to playing, and he's going to try to play him a different way. His opponent will try to play Becker, let's say, for example, and he'll try to move him around more, make him run. So he really he's changed his strategy. His opponent has changed his strategy. So that's a very difficult thing when you start changing.
Right.
And so it can work against you if you're the opponent of Boris Becker.
Right, of course.
And I think that's what happened.
What do you think happened yesterday, Richard? Andy Murray was down two sets. And what was going on with that?
Radek Stepanek was going on. That was what was happening. This guy's 37 years old. He's always been a strange performer, pulling off all sorts of antics and strange tactics on court. And he's the sort of player who can get right through you mentally. And Andy Murray had come here. There was a lot of pressure on him in a good way, that he'd won the Italian Open, his first ever clay court title at the 1000 Masters level. And
he beat Djokovic.
People started talking about him as a favorite to win Roland Garros. And he goes out on this soggy court against this guy who on his day can worry any tennis player in the world. As I said, he's 37, so he's not going to win tournaments, but he can win any individual match. And he just got right through Andy psychologically, and Murray didn't play well for two sets and had to pull it out in five.
Now, let me ask you, had that match not had to stop, do you think that, I mean, it's just, of course, hypothesizing.
No, Murray had turned it around.
Okay.
If the match had continued, he'd have won probably easier than he did, because then you'd have had the fatigue factor. In fact, the stop helped Stepanek because he went off and got a good night's rest. If it had been a five-setter continuously, the 37-year-old would have started to feel
it. Now, we do need to take another break. Richard, do you have to go?
No, I'm okay for a few more minutes.
Okay, well, we have a few more minutes left. We're speaking with Richard Evans, who's been a working journalist for over six decades, a lot with the BBC. He was the play-by-play commentator for BBC Radio at Wimbledon for 20 years. Also, sports medicine trainer, therapist, and Bill Norris, who's worked with some of the greatest athletes of all time. And we're going to take a short break. You even have a Muhammad Ali story.
I do.
Unbelievable. Let's take that break. We'll be right back.
And we're back with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Tuesday's edition. We resume our conversation with Bill Norris. He's taken care of some of the world's greatest athletes. We're reminiscing about his long career in sports medicine and training. And also Richard Evans, now with the Tennis Channel. He's joining us from Paris. The book is Pain, Set, and Match, Keeping Players on Court by the Man Who's Treated Such Stars as Rod Laver and Roger Federer. Bill, where's the best place for someone to pick up the book?
Well, out of the back of my car. No, I do have some books in my car. But anyway, when they see me in Boca, that's a good thing. No, but you can, seriously, it's on Amazon's Create Space. So if they go to Amazon and go to Create Space from there, it's sold in the regular hard copy. Well, it's sort of a soft paper copy, and also it's on Kindle, the Kindle version as well.
And again, it's entertaining and it's informative.
Thank you.
So I have a question for you guys, for both of you, Bill Norris and Richard Evans. Okay, since 2005 through today, we have four people, four players, Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Andy Murray, and of course Novak Djokovic, who's the world number one now, who have dominated, won almost every Grand Slam. That's 11 years. What's going on?
Well, there's a lot of talent out there for those four guys, but it does extend occasionally to the other ones, but they're the principals. They own that territory, and they stake their claim every day.
But that's never happened where you have something like this. Richard, what do you think is going on there?
Well, no, it hasn't happened. I mean, even the famous Four Musketeers of the 1920s, there was a doubles player in there, Jacques Brugnon, who wasn't anywhere near the level of the other three in singles. Now you've got these four guys, and they've really formed a top four club, and they're pretty jealous of it. They don't let the guys in. We had one, Martin Del Potro, beating Federer so sensationally at the US Open back in 2009, and we had Stan Wawrinka upsetting Novak Djokovic here last year in Paris. But really, for the rest of the time, not just the Grand Slam level, but to the ATP 1000 Master level, which is the next level down, they have won something like 80 to 90% of all tournaments, which is incredible. And you ask the guys just below them, the people who've been knocking on that door, like Thomas Burdick and David Ferrer, the great little Spanish runner, and you say, you know, what's the problem? You're so good, you're so close to these guys, but you don't seem to be able to crack it. And David told me one day, he said, they just never drop their level. You expect sooner or later you'll catch them on an off day, but they're always at their maximum, and we can't break through. And it is phenomenal. We won't see its like again, I don't think. I think Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal may be peaking or past their peak, but I think we're going to continue with Novak Djokovic. Andy Murray's still got Grand Slam titles in him, and it's a something that I think has never happened before and probably won't happen again.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, but I think that's the key. They have the ownership to that club, and they don't want to let anybody in.
Let me ask about Djokovic. He had those early struggles with fatigue and the breathing that you talk about in the book, and then he went gluten-free and he did breathing exercises. Does he have the body type or style of playing that will largely avoid injuries, except for like hitting himself in the ankle, which he did at Rome?
I think he's a mixture of the best of Federer and the best of Nadal. He's that middle ground, and so he works this really good. He's a very intelligent player, as the others are, but he seems to thrive on really keeping that edge over the other people.
Yeah. Richard?
Excuse me. I took a whole mouthful of Parisian air.
Ah.
yes, I think Novak Djokovic has got the perfect body for tennis. He's, 6'2", and he's very elastic, and he can get those wide balls, he can do the splits, he's fast, and it's really the perfect body. Andy Murray is more muscular, so, of course, is Rafael Nadal. Roger Federer is also pretty perfect. Bill was talking earlier about how he is light on his feet, how he glides across the court. Right. I love the comment of one of my fellow commentators when he was leading Switzerland to victory in the last year's, the 2014 Davis Cup final against France. And the commentator said after a set, look at the player's socks. And he was playing, I think, Richard Gasquet, who's a very good player, very good mover. But his socks, they were playing on a clay court. His socks were red, and Federer's socks were white.
Always.
Because he hardly touches the surface. Right. And there was visible proof of how light Federer is on his feet. And that has got so much to do with his success.
Bill Norris, we can't run out of time before getting maybe a not very well-known John McEnroe story from you.
Well,
first of all, before we hear that story, let's listen to this.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious. That ball was on the line. Chalk flew up. It was clearly it. How can you possibly call that out?
That's vintage.
Wait a minute, here we go.
Right on the line. No mistakes so far in this match, right? You haven't overruled anything. No mistakes whatsoever.
Second stop, please.
Answer my question! The question, jerk! I wasn't even talking to you, umpire. I wasn't talking
okay.
to you, umpire. Do you hear me?
Anyway, that's how most of us know John McEnroe.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
I remember... one time there was a tournament in Richmond, Virginia, and the umpire of the day was Sue Kane, and her son Tommy was a good friend in the juniors with John. And John came up to Tommy and he said, "Tommy, I beg of you, please convince your mom not to be my umpire for that day." And but she was into this on the schedule, you know, and she had to work that match. And I think John maybe took a little bit off of his game to accommodate his friend's mom.
But you said he had a great heart.
Ah, wonderful heart.
And you also talk about him being such a team player.
Well, it's true. And the thing is, Davis Cup was really his thing. He loved Davis Cup. He was taught by his parents it was an honor to play for his country. So he really took it to heart. He had a great relationship with our captain, Tony Traber, and Arthur Ashe. And he was just a complete team player. He's done so many things, so many good things. And I always defended him, but I always would reprimand him, too, when he needed it. And as I always say to people, you don't know which John McEnroe is going to show up. We have a tournament up in Del Rey, and John has participated in that a couple of times. And, you know, he goes out there, he tries his best every time that he gets on the court, even today when he plays senior tennis. But he also expects the umpires, the ball kids, and the fans to put their best foot forward, too.
Right.
If he's being professional,
maybe
he
the broadcasters
to.
Too.
Exactly.
Well, and Richard, do you have a story, a John McEnroe story, or a story you want to tell? We only have like a minute and a half left.
Well, I've written a couple of books about him, so I know him pretty well. But just to reiterate what Bill Norris said, he surprised everybody by being such a good team player. He's the most highly strung person in that. Everything is magnified in his ears. He'd hear a pin drop in row five, and he's so aware of everything, and that's why he lost the final here against Ivan Lendl. He was leading Ivan Lendl in the 1984 final by two sets to love and a break, and the cameraman's earpiece fell off, and the voice coming through the earpiece completely threw McEnroe off, lost his concentration, lost the match. He's never won the French Open, never won a clay court title. But that was all about this hypersensitivity that's built into his body. He's a very extraordinary human being. He's a friend of mine. He's got huge faults, but actually he's a better person than that. So I'm a McEnroe fan.
Me too.
And
yeah.
I know Bill is too.
Yeah.
Well, Richard, I'm very glad that you contacted Andy Wagner, when you heard another Brit on the radio, and that's how
Yes, nice to hear a British voice.
Yes, and that's
Florida.
How this came about today. We want to thank you. I want to make sure we get the book in. Bill Norris, sports medicine trainer, therapist, indispensable part of the ATP Tour and frequently the U.S. Davis Cup team for over 40 years. Richard Evans, working journalist, author, 6 decades, mostly covering sports, and broadcaster. Together they've written Pain, Set, and Match, Keeping Players on Court by the Man Who's Treated the Stars from Rod Laver to Roger Federer. Thank you both very much for being with
us.
You
want a news flash from Paris?
Yes.
Serena Williams has just won just 2 seconds ago against Magdalena Rybakarova of Slovakia.
All right. Well, enjoy that Parisian air, and I hope the rain stops.
Richard, have a great time.
Yeah, take care, Bill.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks for joining us this hour. Our program was produced by Polly Landis. Technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Richard Ives is lead producer. Tomorrow's program is an at-your-service edition featuring consumer issues. We'll have experts on hand to take your calls about many topics, including how to begin and handle arbitration proceedings. Of course, if you didn't hear the whole broadcast, we have free audio archives at our website, wlrn.org. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.